Hello everyone, I'm Manolis from Liber Space Foundation, and today I will present you the SIDLOC, which is a new telecommunication standard that we started to propose in order to get to identify and localize satellites that are orbiting the Earth. So before I start, are you aware of the TLEs, two line elements? How many of you? Okay, a lot of people. So TLEs is two lines, two text lines that describe the orbit of an orbiting object. Okay, so what is the problem and the motivation behind the SIDLOC? Those orbital data are coming from limited resources, from limited sources. Excuse me. They are public, but not libre. So these sources are mostly military. So we have one source that is the US military and the France military. And they announce them publicly, but of course we have all the restrictions that the military has. Another very interesting limitation is that they provide public data only for space objects that are larger than 10 centimeters. And someone may say, okay, 10 centimeters are enough for satellite. But I know some very annoying people behind there, but they build satellites that are smaller than 10 centimeters. Actually, this is a cubic platform that we've flown a year ago into space and with a Firefly mission. It was a very, very good use case because the second stage of the Firefly rocket failed to deliver the satellites on the correct orbit. So it was 100 kilometers less, if I recall correctly. So the orbit was not the one that we have prepared for our mission, and it was changing very rapidly. Because due to the drag, okay, the traditional ways of getting the orbital data rely on radars. This is the space surveillance network of U.S. military that has few radars across the world. They are quite huge, okay, and in order to get a new orbital formation for your satellite, the satellite must pass through the aperture of such a radar. Okay, and again, if it is small, it is not a guarantee that you will get your orbital data for your satellite. So, the idea of SIDLOC is to put a tiny beacon on a space object. For example, a rocket body, a satellite, or anything that you want to fly. And by transmitting specific signals, you utilize existing ground station networks, like the SatNOGs or whatever you want, do the processing, extract the frequency offset and due to the Doppler, and then by making curve fitting techniques, you can estimate very accurately the orbit. And this is something that we have already done with on SatNOGs using the STRF. I don't know if some one of you are available with the STRF. Okay. It has proven that it can produce a quite accurate orbit. So The goal of SIDLOC is to have a very low power transmitter on board a satellite or a space object, to have low cost, let's say, reasonable cost for a space mission, and also to be zero maintenance. So you attach this beacon on your satellite and you don't have to do anything else. Of course, all of the satellite operators want to, in order to integrate such a solution, wants to be as easy to integrate as possible. So that's why we miniaturize a lot the beacon, and it's in this form is, it, for example, is 3 times larger than required. I will talk about later why. As I said before, it can take advantage and of existing neural sensor network. The RF characteristics of the seedlock is we envision to use the UHF band and 401 to 402 especially. This is quite a dangerous band, let's say, because the meteorological satellites use it. So there was an independent research from ESA if we can use it, and by taking into consideration the power spectral density that we produce on the such frequency, it seems that we can coexist with meteorological satellites. The bandwidth that the seedlock uses is at around 1 MHz, and it transmits a BPSK signal that is generated by direct sequence spectrum system. We use the Gold Coast. I don't know if some of you are familiar with them. They have excellent cross-correlation properties, and especially and more precisely, we repeat 10 times its gold sequence. It has to do with the decoding procedure. That's why the repetitions. And the effective rate is only 50 bits per second. It's a frame of seedlock has a duration of about 12 to 14 seconds. So quite low in data rate, but quite resilient in low SNR scenarios. The TX power is very low. It's only 25 dBm. So here I describe a bit the process of the TX, of the spreading. You have a chip rate which is much higher than the data rate. As I said before, this is 1 MHz. And you just XOR, you perform the XOR of the gold sequence with the initial data to produce a pseudo-noise sequence that is quite higher in bandwidth. So this is the transmission flow graph that we use in order to test and do the simulations. Actually, it's quite simple. Most of the blocks are the GNU Radio core blocks, and we have created 2 additional ones, which is the spreading and the spreading, and one that actually compiles the frame of the seedlock. Very, very simple. On the other side, however, as you may know, everything comes with a cost. Okay, so the RX procedure is quite expensive and computationally intensive. So we have to deal with terms of doing this in real time or not, have enough sensitivity to identify something and then start doing something more, let's say, robust. So there are three major techniques to decode the DSSS signal. It's the autocorrelation one, which from which we can get directly the frequency offset without any issue, but it is it doesn't perform well in low SNR environments. Okay, the other one is the cross correlation with coherent integration, which is I think the most sensitive one. But right now, as we stand at this point, we cannot do decoding in real time in i7. So this is a very big deal. And there is also the cross-correlation with non-coherent integration, which is something in the middle. So the idea is to use autocorrelation only to say, hey, probably a seed lock transmission is currently active, and then switch to cross correlation with non-coherent degradation to extract the frame type and whatever it is needed to be extracted in order to get the full frame, and then offline if the SNR is not enough, switch to cross correlation with coherent integration in order to get the whole frame. So SIGLOCK supports three different type of beacons. The minimal, which is a super minimal amount of information in order to identify which satellite you are currently receiving. The full, which has also location, the location of the satellite, if the satellite supports location estimation through a GPS, let's say, and the integrated, which is it's similar to the full, but the satellite can piggyback some minor information on the data on the SIGLOCK frame itself. So if everything goes wrong on the satellite, operators could still have a clue if, for example, the satellite was never pinged the SIGLOCK beacon. So it could be a clue that it was a catastrophic failure of the satellite, let's say. These are the full beacon fields. Most of them are related to the position. The most interesting of them are two. It's the sync word, which is all ones, and the satellite ID, which is a unique identifier for its space board, its orbiting body, let's say. The all ones is a bit weird for a preamble, but imagine that you using a spreading, you spread these all ones, so you have a repeated pseudo noise sequence, and if you keep it the same, you can integrate it on a larger time window, so you could potentially identify easier the existence of SIGLOCK. So the reference design of the SIGLOCK beacon uses an STM32L4 series MCU, which handles the main control of the hardware and the peripherals. We have for the signal generation, we use the 8086 RF 215 IC in IQ mode. So these particular transceivers can be configured to operate in IQ, and the whole DSP and the IQ generation is done on the ECP5 FPGA that we have on board. So all of these components are inside this cube. Regarding its size, it could be far smaller. But we got an opportunity to fly with Ariane 6, the new rocket from ESA and Ariane. Actually, they mandate to have a deep sub-9 connector. So it is huge comparing to the whole stack. And Manthos, do you recall we had the M5 screws?
They yes. The M5 screws.
Yeah, yeah. So they required M5 screws, which was on this we use M 2.5 2.5 yes yes. Yeah. Okay. So the beacons should be larger, of course. This is the flight model. This will actually fly with Ariane. It had passed the vibration testing. This is the vibration pod that you shake it in order to see if everything holds. The TVAC procedure. So we did also a deployment of the antenna inside the TVAC in order to see if the beacon can deploy its antenna in the cold plateau at minus 20, around minus 20. And actually, we are quite happy with the Sidlock because it's... Liber Space Foundation produces everything in open source and open hardware way. But our previous comms board had this limitation from Xilinx. So we use a Xilinx FPGA. So we had to rely on Vivado in order to build the big thing. But this time we selected properly the hardware in order to produce everything from open tools. So yeah, we are quite proud about it. So the projects involved is of course KiCad for the PCBs, GNU Radio for the ground station decoding and simulations, FreeCAD for the mechanical, Zephyr RTOS plus ECP5 for the onboard controller, and Litex plus Yosys plus Prelis and NextPNR for the ECP5 bitstream. So that's all for me. You can find more information on our GitLab repositories. Everything is there, from PCBs to software. And also you can join our Matrix channels for more information. So that's all for me. Thank you a lot.
So are there any questions?
So the question is if someone can make it out of the box and use it for its own. So yes, you can do that. It's everything there. But of course, you have to respect the frequency the frequency that we'll use. Okay. So for this particular beacon, it's at the frequency that I told you before, it's 401 to 402.
The thing is that this metallurgical frequency, basically, so you chose it for your project, I mean, for this single one?
Not really, because we would like to stay at UHF, okay? Because it is a compromise between the Doppler shift and... and path loss. Okay, so ideally we would like to have to use higher frequencies because the Doppler there is larger. So your quantization error in the Doppler estimation is less. Okay, but then you have the path loss is larger. So it's a chicken egg problem, let's say. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you put any thoughts about coordination for the spacecraft ID to handle?
The space. Sorry.
The coordination for the spacecraft ID, for example.
Yes. The question is who is doing the spacecraft ID coordination? That's a very good question. Actually, there is an idea to use the UUIDs. And a portion of it, take the 76 bits of it and place it at as satellite identifier. But for now, we focus mainly on the modulation and post-processing stuff. And I think that if we see that, hey, this is a valuable way to get accurate orbits and rapidly, then some we can think about an authority or a registration form that you get an ID, so in order to be sure that it's unique. Yes.
Coming or something like that? Were you thinking about that?
Yeah, so the question is if the STM32 microcontrollers is the only choice, or we can move to other choices that are also radiation hardened. There was no a big reason to use the STM32, only for convenience, let's say, because we are familiar with them. Or we can easily find RTOS that are already support them. But as I said, this is a demonstrator. We want to let's say focus on the modulation RF part to show that this is feasible and it can scale also. And not on the hardware itself. So our focus mainly on the protocol specification rather than the actual hardware. So the protocol is open source. So if someone wants to implement a beacon with RadHard components, he is free to do that.
Well, no more questions. Thank you again.
Thank you.